Interview with Dyson E.T., 17th of November, 1965.
Well, they also argued that they did not represent the masses on political problems, and that GAs and village headmen represented them better.
Well, I don't know. I don't think the masses were really interested at all. I mean, I think they were quite happy to go on cultivating their lands, and as long as they weren't worried in any particular way. I wouldn't say they were against reforms, but I don't think they were particularly ardent for reforms. I remember once being told, this isn't exactly a reflection on this point, but do you remember L.J.B. Turner, who was
the writer?
He told me that he met a Danishman, a Dane, up in Munnar district, I think, and he was having a talk with him, and he said, you'd be surprised to find how unpopular you are, the English. We rather patted ourselves on the back as having been reasonably popular, but this Dane seemed to think that there was a great deal of criticism and so on.
I wonder whether he had been in touch with the Persephi or with the educated class.
Well, I think he must have been in touch with the educated class, not the peasantry, but the impression he gave me through Turner was that he was talking about fishing people and that sort of thing.
Wasn't this mass silence just a case of being inarticulate rather than being content with British rule as such?
Well, I thought it was apathy rather than not so much inarticulate as apathetic and not really very interested.
From their horizons were rather limited.
Yes. Of course, schoolmasters and people like that were interested in that thing. What are you going to say?
I was coming on to the 1915 riots. You were in Kurnagala then.
Yes, that's right.
Was there much trouble in Kurnagala?
No. Cumberland, the GA at the time, had the thing very well in hand. I don't know exactly what he did, but I was magistrate, so I had the aftermath of it mostly. There were certain well-delvers, a village where there was a lot of rioting and looting, and there were other places too, quite a number.
What was the village?
Well, W-E-U-D-A,
on
the road to Candy. And there were rumours that there was going to be trouble from the disorderly elements of Dungaslander mines, the Plumbago mines. Rumours that people were coming in from there. And
there were lots of rumours flying about, weren't there?
And it was said that Cumberland took steps to deal with this. I don't know, perhaps he got the mayor to intervene or something like that. I don't know.
The mayor was a big man in the district, wasn't he?
Oh, yes.
But wasn't he a low countryman?
He was, but he had bought up masses of
land.
The father of the metropolitan.
Oh, I see. Yeah, of course.
Jacob de Mel. No, not Jacob. Yes, Jacob de Mel. No, that was the grandfather. The Lactos, his own name is Jacob, but his grandfather was Jacob de Mel. H.L. de Mel, Henry de Mel.
Yeah.
He was knighted and he was murdered, you remember? Well, you wouldn't remember, of course, long before your time.
What was the government view of the 1915 riots as a whole?
Well, I think they entirely discounted the idea that it was inspired by German agitation.
Who put forth this idea?
Oh, I think it's just a few rash people who thought it was, you know, sort of the way these rumours get about.
So you would not support the theory that local agents of the Freudenbergs inspired the Candy riots?
I shouldn't think so, no.
This was in Dumbo.
My opinion is that it was entirely economic. It was it is rather curious, I must admit, that it broke out simultaneously in so many places at almost the same time.
But it was almost the same time, and don't you think this coincidence in timing was the effect of rumour and a few instigators?
Quite likely, yes. Very likely. Of course, as you know, it broke out on religious grounds in Candy. But think the animosity behind the Cingalese was due to the fact that they resented the dominance of the Moors in economic and trading and in buying up land when they got to a village. And
do you think officials consider these Raj an organized and premeditated uprising against the British rule?
No, I don't think so myself. I certainly never believed that, and I don't think my colleagues did either.
Well, yes, I have read a thesis on this, and Governor Chalmers,
oh, yes,
first dispatch categorically states it was not political,
yes,
and not anti-British as such.
Yes.
On the other hand, in 1916, many of the European community, and by this I do not mean the officials only,
no,
definitely, I think especially the planters in outstations, definitely believed that it was there were intentions to attack them.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that this was correct?
No, I would say it wasn't correct, but I think it's quite possible that quite a number of planters did believe that, but I don't think it was correct belief.
Yes, I see. And Bonaloa stated in Parliament that it was a premeditated, he used the word premeditated uprising. Mm-hmm. I think, and Bowes definitely, he calls it an organized rebellion.
Bowes did?
Yes,
really?
He not only does that, he says that he suspects in this case that Frydenberg's local agents in Doomborough inspired the Canary Riots.
No, well, I quite disbelieve that myself.
Really?
I don't know if I've got any deep grounds for my disbelief, but it doesn't seem to me correct at all. They struck me as pretty spontaneous things.
Yes. I think in Colombo, a recent study has shown that in Colombo alone, there was some industrial unrest. You see, these railway workers were struck in 1912. They were dissatisfied with, they had called off a strike expecting concessions, and they were dissatisfied ever since.
Yes.
And there's some proof to show that they led some of the attacks on boutiques, you see.
Oh, I see.
But this is purely a Colombo point.
Yes.
But why did the government arrest these DS and Naika and other leaders?
Well, I don't know. I knew a planter of my own name, who is not a relative, but a great friend of mine, who lived in that area, at Angadama, and he was in touch with Moore, afterwards Governor General, who was at that time especially appointed as A.J. for Raft duty in that area, I think. And I think he told me that it was Moore who arrested Seninarco. And of course, in the later years, they were on very good terms as governor and prime minister. But I don't know why. It was the fact that he had been very much, I believe, in immersed in this temperance agitation that you were talking about. Although, as I say, I don't personally think it was political. There was a lot of feeling at the time and a suspicion on that ground, and he was a man of great influence and so on. But what he did to rouse Muir's immediate suspicion, I really don't know.
Do you think that some of the officials, at least, and the British community, were rather ultra-sensitive on this point about criticisms of British rule, very to the new thing?
Oh, I think some were, yes, I do. I don't remember anybody sort of expressing real indignation, but more in a supercilious sort of way.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, this is again hypothetical, but firmer action in Kandy would have quelled the riots?
No, I don't really think it would. Mm-hmm.
Who was the GA?
Was it Vaughan?
I think it was.
It was before Kinsey this time. I think Vaughan. Well, I shouldn't know.
Was he a weak man as such?
Well, some people might say he was. He almost gave the impression of being certainly not a strong man, didn't he?
Indecisive. Mm.
Yes, I think perhaps so. But he was a man who knew person did a lot of travelling, and he was very, very good at picking up information. And he said that the Vaughan had got a very good knowledge of the province.
And in Colombo, would you say that the police didn't have the training and the backbone to handle this sort of thing, the police?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't express an opinion on that.
Of course, it was sheer coincidence. It so happened that the riots in Colombo broke out when the governor and the colonial secretary and the IGP were all away.
Oh, yeah.
And the impression I get is that the first few days, everyone was, there was no one in charge. And
nobody prepared to take great responsibility.
And to order shootings.
Yes, that may have been so.
Do you think martial law was necessary?
Well, considering the state of affairs in Colombo, yes, I think it was. It certainly wasn't necessary in Colonel Aguilar. There was no need of it at all there.
Do you think it was necessary? I incline to think it was, but was it necessary to prolong it for 3 months?
Well, I don't really remember. As I say, I was all that time I was in Carnegie, and I was very busy with court cases arising from the riots. And that's about all I could say.
You wouldn't happen to know how much influence Herbert Dowbergine and Brigadier General Malcolm had with regard to advice on handling the riots?
Well, I should say Dowbergine a lot. I mean, he was a very strong man and a very able man, and I should think any governor or colonial secretary would definitely take this.
What about Bowes?
He was a very able in quite a different way from Dowbergine.
In what way?
Well, you've mentioned cynicism for one thing.
Oh, I see.
I mean, nobody would accuse Dowbergine of being cynical, but I can quite imagine Freddie Bowes. I was very fond of Freddie Bowes, but I think
he was a bit unpredictable. A bit French, was he?
Oh, yes. He married a French wife, ultimately, but not until after he died.
What about Sir Anton Bertram? Was he a weak man?
Well,
seems to think so.
I should think he might have been. I liked Sir Anton Bertram very much. I should be inclined to think he's, wouldn't you? A little bit on the weak side?
He was suffering breakdowns, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was temperamental.
Temperamental.
Mm. Well, at any rate, perhaps not temperamental, but as a suffering from a nervous strain, quite apart from the riot.
Yes, I see, as a man, yes.
Mm. Perhaps overwork, I don't know. But he was a nice chap.
You didn't talk to any European planters in your area about the riots?
Well, I must have done so. I mean, they were always coming. We weren't very near any. We used to go out with some chap called Warburton Gray. We went out to see him and his wife several times. Arampala, that's the nearest place. But lots of the planters used to come in regularly to play tennis and so on. I must have talked to them, but I don't seem to remember any special impressions.
Mm-hmm. They were not alarmed as such.
Oh, I don't remember any. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't a question like when the Mopla riots were in India.
Yes, I see. Were Indian events in your mind, say, before these riots? There was some forms of extremism and terrorism in India.
Yes.
Did you reflect on these and on their implications?
Well, I thought how lucky we were in Ceylon to have nothing of that sort. I didn't think there was any likelihood of political assassination or anything of that sort.
Is it true that in the height of these riots, once they had clamped down with martial law, Brigadier General Malcolm sent an order, take no prisoners?
Oh dear, I never heard that. But I did hear the case of a Colombo man, a professional man, I'm not sure, he wasn't an American actually, rather boasting that when they were out in Sabrugamwa, they fired more or less at random.
Oh, I see.
But whether he was just a boaster.
My father seems to think that Malcolm was a bit dotty.
Oh, well, I've never heard any enthusiastic praise of Malcolm, I must say, but to me, he's a very shabby character.
Mm-hmm.
I never met
him. What about these Drumhead court martials, which, well, there was later some agitation against these. What were the findings of this commission of inquiry? There was a commission.
Yes, there was. I don't remember. No.
I, as far as I know, they said that, well, these were illegal as such, these court martials and shooting on the spot. But they had been done in good faith.
Mm.
That's the impression I have, but I was trying to confirm it.
Mm. Well, I should have thought from most people not that I knew many of the people who, if any, can't remember any who were on any of these court martials, but I should have thought, on the whole, things were done in good faith and possibly in the desire to show strong arm. And
well, Boer says that quite often these petrels were so helpless, they arrived at the tail end of everything, where people had vanished because they knew they were coming.
Yes.
But when they went back to headquarters, they were sent out again and told, for God's sake, do something, some sort of frustration.
Yes. Well, I do remember a case of a headman being shot in Cape Gall district, and it was a very bad show. That was in Wood Renton's report, I think.
Why was he shot?
Because he said he couldn't arrest somebody,
They shot him on the spot.
But that was one of the cases referred to in the and taken up in that commission.
Was it? Would you say it was correct? Would it be correct to say that sometimes these platoon leaders couldn't quite control the Punjabi troops?
Oh, I don't know at all.
Partly because of language.
Yes, I couldn't tell you that at all. Because there were, as far as I remember, there were no Punjabi troops in Kurangal or Kurunagala district. I don't remember any. And I couldn't express an opinion about
that. The popular view, well, among some of the politicians, was that government rather panicked and went to extremes. Would you comment on that?
Well, I don't know whether this little story would be thought relevant on that. Cumberland was summoned, who kept order very well, as far as I could see, in Kurunagala. Was summoned down to Colombo and was interviewed by Stubbs.
Mm-hmm.
And said, why didn't you do this and that and the other? And he said, well, of course, if you ordered me to, I'd stand on my head, but I don't think it'd do any good. I think that may have indicated that Stubbs was a bit panicky, I don't know.
In your court cases, would you say that you found these Moors, well, having been at the butt end of these riots, they now took the opportunity of bringing charges against some of their old enemies?
Because, well, I had to dismiss a lot of cases, if that's any indication of that. I mean, because I didn't think the evidence was good enough, but I don't remember any cases in which the defense was that they were charged because they got a grudge against them.
Mm-hmm. And Boer says that only one person lost her life, actually, accidentally. But this seems rather an extreme point of view.
Only one person lost her life accidentally? What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. He uses the phrase accidentally. Mm. But certainly it can't be true, because my father says that when they were chasing some people, the policeman fell down and his gun went off and shot some old man.
Where was your father at that time?
He was PM Colombo.
Oh, Colombo, yes. Oh, well, he'd know a lot.
Was Sir John Anderson rather unpopular because of his views on the handling of the rats. This was 1917.
I wouldn't say he was unpopular. I think he's probably unpopular with some of the planters, but I shouldn't think he was unpopular. He wasn't enthusiastically loved by the civil service.
Why? Was it because of what sort of qualities?
He was perhaps was rather reserved, and I only met him once at a dinner party at the Queen's at the King's Pavilion, and so my impression can't work very much.
Yes, I
thought he was quite a good fellow.
Just one last question. Is there any foundation for this local gossip that Mr. Ennis did not get a knighthood because of his because he was critical of government's action in 1915?
I should have thought so, but he wasn't. I know that he wasn't very popular with the government owing to his... He was generally regarded as an acquitting judge.
Oh, I see. Yes. My father also seemed to think that he was not a very good judge.
Yes. Well, I think he upset decisions unnecessarily and things like that in appeal. And I remember one particular case where two policemen were charged with assaulting. I don't know whether intimidating a woman who was at Folger Hoella police station. And I just managed to took up the case and I committed it. It was tried twice. Can't quite remember why it was tried twice, but on one occasion it was tried by Woodrington, and the other occasion it was tried by Ennis. And Ennis definitely summed up an acquittal, and Woodrington definitely summed up a conviction.
And
men were acquitted.
Oh, I see.
So I think Ennis's must have been the second case.
If I may switch to another sphere, I was going to ask you about the village headman system. For instance, the Gan Sabhas, did you find them useful as administrative bodies?
Oh, they were quite all right. I mean, they did their job satisfactorily.
What about, I thought they were not really, what about their work in irrigation matters? They were not quite up to the mark, were they?
Well, they needed keeping up to the mark. There were, in Anuradhapura, there were four or five inspectors who, if they hadn't gone around frequently, I no doubt a lot more village work, irrigation work, would have been neglected and was neglected. But
What would you say were their shortcomings?
The shortcomings were, lethargy and taking things too easily. And
corruption?
No, I shouldn't have thought so. But I don't really know.
It's a difficult thing.
Very difficult. Well, one thing very much struck me in that connection I was G.A. Anuradhapura, Freeman, you've heard of Freeman, I guess.
Oh, yes.
He was still living there in retirement. And I had a case where there was strong ground for suspicion against the Katramudlia. And I was holding him an inquiry, and I had a talk with Freeman, and he said, well, the villagers do say that he takes more than he ought to. I mean,
he's
justified to taking something.
But not...
Yes.
What sort of man was Freeman?
Oh, he was a very interesting man indeed. A bit of a visionary.
Impractical.
A bit impractical. They had a special kind of tenure in Anuradhapura with Freeman and Nansa Deepa Widema. the land that they got Akaredama, which were given on crown lands, and I then inherited Idama, I forget what that was, and then Freeman Unamse, Dipu, Idama, the land given by Mr. Freeman.
I see. Would you say he was somewhat naive and guileless?
Yes, oh, definitely, yes. Oh. But he was thoroughly sympathetic with the villager, but prepared to say, well, you ought to be able to, if they need the land, the forest, and need to cut it down, you ought to let them cut it down. But he wasn't prepared to subscribe to any system of rotation, by which, at least, he might have subscribed to the system, but if you, the enforcing of it, he wasn't.
Uh-huh. How useful were the Gansabala courts, the judicial work?
Oh, I think they were. Well, I had more to do with the village tribunals than the Gansabalas.
Yes.
The village tribunals.
Tribunals.
Oh, they were quite useful.
Did they help, you think, in reducing litigation?
Oh, yes, I do, yes.
But didn't people prefer the police courts?
Well, I really couldn't say. Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, did you find any difference between the working of the Gansaba in Anuradhapura and in Kalchura?
No, that's hard to say. I'm afraid I wasn't really observant enough, but
training your memory, really.
Yes, but I should think probably they were more active, there'd be more active people in Kalchur district than in Anuradhapura, and they were more sophisticated down there.
You didn't find any difference between, say, the Kandyan headman and the Low Country headman?
Yes, I did in some ways. In what ways? You count the Anuradhapura headman as Kandyan headman, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And my only experience of Low Country headman was 2 brief years at Kalchura. Just a few months at Mathura. And of course in Jaffna, but that's rather different. I think there was more paternalism in Anuradhapura than in Kalchura. I mean,
that is to be expected.
Yes, you were still in the old traditional phase, whereas in Kalchura you were in a developing economy. And
do you think the headmen were overloaded with work?
No, I shouldn't think so. Mm-hmm. They tended to do, but I shouldn't say they were overloaded with work. You mean not the chief headman, you mean the village headman?
Village headman.
No, I don't think so.
What about the Korale and the Ratamahatyas?
Well, I think some of the Ratamahatyas had pretty hard work, but nobody ever struck me as being overworked. They're sort of reduced to a shadow or anything like that.
Do you think they should have been paid more?
Well, of course, they weren't paid at all until I'd been out for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think the traditional idea, there was much to be said of the traditional idea of depending on local people of influence. But I think the time had come when it was necessary to pay them. And I think perhaps they should have been paid rather more.
Just a shot at this question. I mean, have you any idea what motivated the political criticism of this system?
Oh, well, I think probably a feeling that the headman would resent anybody coming in to their areas and asking for support from the villagers, quite independent of them.
some jealousy then?
Yes, I say so. Yes.
What sort of governor was Manny?
Very level-headed, I should say. Probably not terribly sympathetic, but shrewd, sensible man.
You were under him.
Oh yes, yes, all his time.
Did you like working in the secretariat?
But I wasn't working. Yes, sir. When it was during the interregnum, when wasn't it? I think.
1919.
He came in 1919, didn't he?
Yes. And you were under Stubbs, were you?
I was under Stubbs, yes. I must have been under Manning just when he first came, but only for a few months. Oh yes, I do definitely remember, because I do remember Stubbs had a very amusing way of minutes that he put up for the governor, rather caustic comments he used to put in the margin sometimes, not complimentary to some of the officers
Stubbs or Manning?
No, Stubbs used to do them.
He had a sharp tongue, didn't he?
Oh, very sharp wit, yes, sharp. And on one of his quotations, that's nothing to do with Manning, but he said, some fellow, you know, it's a very favourite phrase in petitions, to say, you are next to God. And he said, Proximus said, longo intervallo. And there was a man, a German Swiss who'd been expelled during the war and was seeking permission to come back. He was in America, I think. And Stubbs...
Frey, was it?
No, Frey, no. Don't remember the name at all. And Stubbs put up a memo to the man. He made a lot of quotes, said, well, you, the best thing is to leave him in some doubt as to whether he'd be admitted or not. After all, he would probably say to himself, post omnia pura est perdere nolum, which means you are a classical man.
No,
are
I'm not.
Oh, well, that means, after all, it would be madness to risk losing one's passage money, nolum. I thought it was rather bad taste for him putting these classical quotations up in minutes to the military governor,
who probably
didn't know much Latin.
Yes, I see. Mm. Was he very bureaucratic minded?
Stubbs?
Yes, officious and...
I think he was quite fair minded. He was, I think perhaps he was a bit bureaucratic minded. After all, he'd been trained from immediately from leaving Oxford, he'd gone into the colonial office. And
because Bowes has a really vast diatribe against him.
Yes.
And he said that Stubbs thought in terms of details and not on general questions.
Well, that might be true.
You didn't get that impression?
No, I didn't get that impression, but I wouldn't be prepared to counter it.
Mm-hmm. And how about Sir Graham Thompson?
I thought he was a very able chap, very nice fellow and very able. Of course, he was ill and he...
Even in the 1920s?
Oh, no, not when he was colonel secretary. Oh, no, he was quite fit then. It was when he was governor and he died on the voyage home, as you probably know. Oh, yes, I had an admiration for him. You probably know the story of how he came to be appointed when he was in the Admiralty. Churchill often used to send for an admiral who was in charge of some particular branch and ask him a question. He said, oh, I'll send for Graham Thompson, he'll know all about this. And eventually Churchill said, oh, well, I'll send for Graham Thompson myself, you can go out and do some work at sea. And so he appointed Graham Thompson in charge of that department instead of being the chief administrative secretary, and that was what gave him his chance to get a governorship.
Oh, I see. Was he a man of much imagination?
Yes, I think so. Yes. Yeah.
In this period, in the 1920s, well, you were mostly out in the provinces, weren't you?
Yes, I only had two spells, only really one spell in Colombo. That was 1918 to 1920.
Okay. What was your... Did you read the Ceylonese run English newspapers as such?
Well, I didn't read them as a regular duty.
No.
I just glanced at them sometimes.
What did you think of their style and tone?
Well, I wasn't... what were the Independent and the Morning Leader, was it? And
then the Daily News in the 1920s.
Well, I wasn't very much impressed, but I thought they were the kind of papers you'd probably, kind of cheaper journalism that you've had in this country.
Okay. Uh-huh. And at this time in the legislature there were these reforms. What did you think of these Manning, well, as they've been called, the Manning reforms,
yes,
those
yeah.
of 1920 and 1924? Mm-hmm. For instance, the one in 1920, did Manning have much to do with it, or was it the work of his Secretary of State?
Oh, no, I think it was Manning himself. I know Collins will be able to tell you a lot about this, because I was in the Secretariat at the time, and working in the same room as he was most of the time, and he was summoned up to Queen's Cottage in Aurelia for 3 or 4 days to type out the dispatch. It was essential that it should be a completely
secret.
Confidential, and he was quite a good typist. So,
Colin?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see. And this was a period, do you remember a man called Gunasinghe?
Yes, I do, yes.
What was your opinion of him?
You mean the sort of agitator?
Yes.
I don't remember details about him. But if you refresh my memory, I may remember a little more.
There was a 1923 strike.
Railway strike, was it?
Railwayman, and then I think it spread to the harbour.
Mm.
And he led this.
Mm.
Were his activities looked on
with disfavour?
Yeah, with horror, more or less.
Oh, I should think so, yes, yes. Didn't he afterwards become the state councillor in Gaul or somewhere?
Not in Gaul, but somewhere.
Hmm. Yes.
This sort of thing, what about the Legislative Council?
Mm-hmm.
These personal attacks on civil servants, were they greatly resented?
I think some people did resent them quite a lot, yes. I shouldn't think it was general. I can't remember at the moment any particular one speaking hotly against them or anything of that sort.
The Donimo Commission said that civil servants were demoralized as a result, but were they?
Well, I shouldn't say so, no.
It's rather strong.
No, I think that's it. Yes. Yes, I do remember that coming in the report, and I thought, well, I didn't feel like that myself. There was quite a bit of talk incident where E.W. Pereira put his oar in, but I thought that was justified. I didn't think he... And, of course, some civil servants would have felt that interference like that was very bad, and they would resent it. But on the whole, I think that at that time, let me see, Sir Graham Tyrrell was then G.A. Carnagala. And I remember him coming up to Nureda and coming to... I was then A.G. in Nureda and coming to see us and talking about the arrangements he was making for the elections and so on. And he didn't seem to bear any ill will against the local members.
Socially, did you discuss Indian events at all at this time?
You mean...
Now Gandhi was coming up and there was this mass movement. Did you discuss this sort of thing?
Oh, yes. Gandhi is very much in the picture of discussions and talks, certainly.
Did you feel that this sort of thing had any implication in Ceylon?
Of course, he did come over to Ceylon. I was invited by the sponsor of a meeting at Kaltra to go and hear him, but unfortunately I'd arranged to go up country at the time, and I didn't feel inclined to break my arrangement and stay back for that. Gandhi was undoubtedly enormously admired in Ceylon. I think most Europeans thought he was rather a nuisance of a visionary. Perhaps they didn't even regard him as a visionary, and perhaps they thought he was an agitator, but I think most people did give him credit for being sincere. Mm-hmm.
Would you say that a man like Gunnar Singh, was he regarded as an opportunist and a rather irresponsible?
Oh, I should say so, yes.
He was. Do you think, of course you didn't know him personally?
No.
Were trade union activities per se regarded as seditious?
It was likely to be seditious, I should think, perhaps, but not necessarily seditious.
For instance, ultimately there was some labour legislation in 1929. Do you remember?
29. No, I was, that time I was then Rajapura.
GA, wasn't you?
Yes.
You and wouldn't really...
Well, I'm Rajapura would have nothing to do with trade unions at all. No, I'm afraid I have no recollections of that act.
Yeah. What about these 1924 constitution, for instance? What strikes me is that it was very similar to the constitutions, well, the system operating in the first colonial empire, and also, say, to the Jamaica constitution of the 19th century, which had been abolished ultimately as unworkable and as having rather bad constitutional principles.
Well, that's curious, because Manning had been governor of Jamaica, and you'd have thought that he wouldn't have...
It was not all that recent, it was not in his time.
Oh, not
but
in
it was time. In around 1866 that there was trouble. And
oh,
was,
I see.
But the 1924 constitution had very much the same system, with this legislative council had financial power and, not so much responsibility, but no executive power. And the executive had lots of executive power, but couldn't control the finances.
Yes, well, I remember there was a lot of talk at the time, wasn't it, about power without... No. Yes, power without responsibility. Yes, that was the talk. I think those at headquarters probably had some difficulty in getting things through and done. I remember when the boycott, well, you know the boycott of Jaffna when the Dunmore Commission came in. Mm-hmm. Well, the Kachamudra there, who was a very good chap, was speaking, I think, at some school prize giving or something of that sort, and he was advising the Jaffna people to give up the boycott and go in for. And I thought, well, this is a very sound thing. To my great surprise, I had a letter from Colombo telling me to take off the Mudra for taking part in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And, I told him I'd had this letter and implied that I didn't at all agree with it, and that the ticking off was the mildest possible ticking off, and he could regard it as a pat on the back if he liked, or something like that. But I was afterwards up in Aurelia, and Tyrrell, who was then Chief Secretary, told me, talking about this incident, he said, well, as a matter of fact, the governor finds it difficult enough, the governor then being, I think, Sir Graham Thompson, he finds it difficult enough to carry on the government of the country with the Legislative State Council as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had five more Protestant members from Japan, it would be still more difficult. So he was rather pleased that the boycott carried on.
Oh, I see. That's a very interesting point. But what was your reaction to the 1924 constitution as such?
Well, I really don't, unless you refresh my memory, I don't remember the difference between it and the
1920 and 24 were very similar.
Yes.
And that sort of constitution, what was your attitude to it?
Well, I thought it was a reasonable development, and of course, I know the Donoghue criticized it very much, and they went right to a different, entirely different arrangement, to sort of a county council.
You see, Clifford called it an unworkable.